Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Absolutely emphatic.
And Jay De Beers. Oh, yes. Luther Blissett. That's a spectacular goal.
And Helgeson comes in first. Oh, it's a goal.
And a goal. Sensational.
Hello and welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. My name is Matt Mezziano and I'm joined by Jordan Weimer and Tom Burdell to discuss, oh my goodness, a third away victory of 2023. Guys, how are you doing first before we get into it? Jordan?
Yeah, doing very well. Good to be back again. These three game weeks always come fast, don't they? So I guess we didn't do the first. We did two games together, didn't we? Either way, it seems like we were just recording. So yeah, good to be here talking about another positive Watford result.
Indeed, Tom. Yeah, it does feel like we're talking all the time at the minute, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's much more enjoyable this season, I have to say, than last season, where it felt like a bit of a drag when we had games on games. So, no, all good here, mate. No complaints from my side. I didn't catch it live, but I watched it back this afternoon on Y Scout. So that was a fairly fun way to spend an hour or so.
Nice one. Yeah, I was stuck in London trying my best to find somewhere where I could watch the game. I unfortunately didn't manage to achieve that, so that was a shame. But if anyone out there knows of a place where one can watch a Watford game, perhaps there's a pub that favours Watford and will put the game on no matter what through various sources, then put that link towards us, because I'd love to know if there's something that I can get to on these occasional days when I can't get to a screen of my own. Right, well, anyway, straight into the Hull City game then. And I think the first thoughts that we had when we saw the lineup was, oh, it's exactly the same. Not even a goalkeeper change, Jordan.
Yeah, I think that was the big one, wasn't it? The decision to leave Backman out once available. And, you know, it was potentially that kind of, maybe punishment's a harsh word, but obviously Hamer took the opportunity in the last game. And, you know, this is what happens if you're unavailable. These things can happen if you're Dan Backman. So, I mean, it was a slightly controversial one, but I think it's probably split. Was it evenly, or would you say people there's more in favour of the change or the continuing with Hamer or not?
I think that has probably changed post-Hull compared to pre-Hull. What do you think, Tom?
It's been a wild week, hasn't it? In so many ways. I said when we discussed Daniel Backman, it's like a standing item on the agenda now, isn't it, Daniel Backman, one way or another. And I said after the Norwich game, what a great week to be Daniel Backman, even though he's been sent off, because Ben Hamer's done absolutely nothing to suggest that he can take over as number one. Cue him being included ahead of Backman on Saturday and then saving a penalty to essentially win us the game. Yeah, that just shows that I haven't got the first clue what I'm talking about is when it comes to goalkeepers, which may or may not be news to people. I think it's, as I tweeted at the time, it feels pretty significant, right? That Valerian Ismail himself and the kind of hierarchy above him have made a big point about discipline being something of his that's important, and that, you know, be part of the reason he was brought in and be part of the reason he was given a new contract. And so I think you can't take it to be anything other than significant when he decides to leave his captain out. You know, he has been untouchable in this in this season at least, Daniel Backman, captain, number one goalkeeper, 5-year contract behind him. It doesn't get much more secure than that. But I think Ismail has shown a fairly kind of sizable pair of stones to make that decision, and at the moment it's paid off.
Yeah, I think there's also the element of giving Batman some real accountability to his actions too. You know, he has to understand if he's going to be putting himself in a position to miss games, it doesn't come without consequence, or at least the consequence can be greater than just the absence of one game. And you know, I think Hamer, obviously the penalty save, you know, boosts a lot of the feelings on him, but he did well enough. And you know, Backman has had moments, but it's not like he's been this outstanding, undroppable player. So he's been just, you know, around that kind of middling average point where if you get a competent backup come in, you know, no, people aren't screaming for Dan to come straight back into the starting 11. So yeah, you know, maybe there's an element of personality in there, but you know, it's tough to say. Backman can be abrasive to the referee, but I'm not sure exactly what the feeling on him is from the rest of the squad. But
So Tom, does this mean that it's Ben Hamer's shirt to lose, or do you think that Backman comes back in after he's served his, I don't know, you've been a naughty boy on the naughty step type
well,
scenario?
I think that's quite an apt way of framing it, to be honest with you, because if Backman comes back in now for Southampton, then you would say, well, it was just a bit of a slap on the wrist, you know, on the naughty step for a week. But, you know, no real harm done. Don't do it again. Ruffle his hair, you know, you little scamp kind of thing. If he thinks he needs to be dropped at all, and he evidently did, then I think it needs to be, yeah, a proper kind of, you're out of the, we're going to take you out, whether it's kind of couched as internally as we're taking you out of the firing line for a bit, or no, Ben Hamer's now the guy I've got more trust in, or as you say, kind of a better fit for the team, kind of calmer, whatever it may be. I think he has to have the courage of his convictions. He's done the hard bit now and dropped him for a game, and do that. And I think it's also probably a bit more of a natural way of approaching the captaincy thing, that, you know, you've not been stripped of the captaincy. You've come out of the team for a few weeks, well, however long it ends up being. I'm sure it won't be the rest of the season. I'd be staggered if it was the rest of the season. You know, you come out the team for the rest of the week and someone else has taken over as captain in the meantime. But I think it is Ben Hamer's shirt to lose. I think if we've, as you say, learned anything with Loser, he picks on merit rather than reputation. And I think we've all at one time or another cried out for that with managers. So I'm all for it, despite being president of the Daniel Backman fan club.
yeah. I'm sure you'll be getting some emails from Backman wondering what's happening there. Let's take a quick moment just to talk about that penalty save, because it was a very good one. If we analyse it, it was a decent shot in the corner, maybe not quite as far as in the corner as some have made out, but it was a pretty well hit shot. What did you make of it, Jordan? Did you rate it at the time?
Yeah, it's a good save. You know, I think he did well. You know, it was never easy, obviously, but if you're going to go to that side, you've got to commit, and he does pretty well to kind of extend and get a strong hand to it. So, you know, penalty saves are always an interesting one to judge a keeper on, but I mean, no real complaints. Obviously, he looked pretty confident, and you know, once he kind of saw he was going that direction, it didn't even look close. It was a very, very solid save.
I thought it was interesting that you made a comment on Twitter, something around the fact that he'd always gone that side. Is that right, Jordan? But when Ben Hamer was asked after the game, how did you know which way to dive? He said that he didn't know, that he hadn't looked at any of Philogene's shots before. And so it was just I don't know, he just kind of felt it was going to go in that direction. So interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of assumed they'd done a little bit of homework there, and maybe you got lucky, I guess. But you know, I think there's also the element of when the player is his run up was pretty short. Just his body position, his angle on the ball, and his how far away he was from the ball for a right footed player. He always kind of looked more likely to drag that ball across to the bottom corner. It's kind of my intuition from it, but so maybe that's enough that Hamer kind of felt that off the body language and went for it. It was I think oftentimes it can be underutilized, disguising the run up a little bit more and make it a little bit harder for the keeper, because it looked like the probability that he'll be dropping into that corner. Thankfully, he was.
And a significant moment in time, Tom.
I think the other significant thing about that was that he got it around, he got it away and out for a corner. You know, so often you see penalties, don't you, that they make the save and then it follows up and that's that. I think given the way the second half panned out, they'd had quite a bit of possession. They hadn't necessarily done much with it, and it wasn't certainly wasn't a case of Hamer's goal being peppered with efforts, but I reckon had they equalised, gone ahead at that point, then it might have been a very different game. I suspect their tails would have been up. So yeah, it was the real kind of the turning point in the match, wasn't it? I mean, it looked it to me, right? I don't think Livermore could have any complaints, to be honest. He trailing leg catches him, doesn't it? Was it Tyler Morton he caught? I couldn't quite tell who it was, but I didn't have any issue with it, I must admit.
The only question I had on it was that it seemed as though he was stopping himself, and when contact was made, there was a slight delay between the contact touching the player and the player going down, suggesting the player was sort of like for a moment thinking, oh, hang on a second, I've been touched here. If I go down quick enough, I can maybe get this one.
I think there's a bit of clumsiness in there, wasn't there, as well, from Livermore. It was just a little bit slow, a little bit laboured.
Yeah, yes. And to be honest, if that's gone, you know, against the Watford player in the box, I'm asking for that penalty all day long. So I'm not surprised that they asked for it and that they got it. And, it, you know, now we can say that it was saved. We don't feel too badly about it being given, do we? But it should have been given upon reflection. So, yeah, fair enough.
Bonus train in there in the background too. Did we establish if that was a train noise last episode? I didn't listen back to know.
I didn't hear a train, but you know what? I didn't hear one just then as well. So, Tom, can you confirm, was there a train?
Well, I did. I'll be the adjudicator. I did hear that one just then.
Okay, so that's 1-0 to Jordan on the train. So,
yeah, that's one.
On the train recognition.
I'll put a little scratch on my wall here next to me. That keeps...
That's it.
It all started off very well, actually, for Watford that game. Another goal for Kiembe, who is going from strength to strength.
Yeah, another good game for him, I think, right? The position that he popped up in to score, you wouldn't have seen him in last season or even probably at the start of this season. But this kind of role change has freed him so much to do that. And he's shown a real knack for getting in the box and the timing of his runs and so on. And he had another chance later in the game from memory as well, from a similar kind of area, kind of cut back, which I think he plonked way, way over the bar from memory. I'm sure I'm not misremembering this. I hope I'm not. But he put kind of comfortably over the bar. But yeah, no, I thought it was another really good game from him. I think the thing that kind of was impressive as well was that the way that he and Kone both pressed as well. They both seemed to get much higher up the field out of position, as did Rajovic, and really do a lot of defensive work off the ball, you know, in terms of that defensive shape and trying to make life hard for Hull to play out, which is what they wanted to do. So, you know, it was a real all-round performance from him. And as I tweeted in the week, he could go to AFCON with Congo. And, you know, at the start of the season, you would have assumed that if we lost any midfielder to AFCON, it would be Imran Lusa. And now it's the other way around, and you're thinking, oh, bloody hell, that's going to be a blow if we miss out on him for potentially a month or so.
Yeah, he's been on the fringes of their squad, but they can obviously take 25, can't they? So he's probably going to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Which would be a bit of a blow, you're right. I think we might have to look at something in January if that is to be the case. Right?
Certainly if both of them go, you would think. But yeah, no, it's definitely a concern, which, you know.
Jordan, another one along with Kiembe, who had a decent game and actually set up that goal, was Jamal Lewis. He spent a lot of time underlapping Ken Semmer. How effective was he in that game? You know, it seems like he's another one that's been going from strength to strength recently, and I think he deserves a bit of time from us talking about him.
Yeah, no, he was. He had another good game. I think we've started to see a lot more from him in recent weeks. I think against Norwich too, him and Ken down the left were quite effective. We've become quite heavily focused on that left-hand side. And a big part of that is down to Lewis's movement as well. He looks much more controlled. You know, we talked about when he came to the club on loan, we thought, you know, looking at his time, especially at Norwich, he's someone that wants to be on the ball. He wants to be involved in build-up, and that'd be something he'd really thrive upon. We're starting to see that a little bit, so it's good to see. As you say, you mentioned there, kind of underlapping, getting into those central positions. We started to see that a little bit more, you know, introducing that that role of the inverted fullback back into the team. And he's one that really benefits from that. And that was something in general, you know, I think we discussed previously talking about kind of the direction of this team. And I think it was maybe in relation to a question that had been asked. In terms of what kind of route or kind of progression we're seeing or going to see from this team this season. And, you know, I was a little bit pleasantly surprised overall, just the fact that we were starting to introduce some elements of that early season football into this more, slightly more conservative style that we've adapted to, you know, after a few kind of shaky results and performances early on. So I think we are starting to see more of a blending than I initially thought. And a big part of that is coming from the likes of Lewis.
And on the pressing point that Tom picked up on a few moments ago, was that something that you think caught the whole manager by surprise? Because if you'd seen any of Watford's previous away fixtures, it wouldn't have been something that he would have been looking out for from this game, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think Rossini, I think the thing is, the way they play, they do expose themselves that a little bit. They are wanting to, you know, have a significant amount or try to retain the ball in those areas. I think the dual eights can be really effective in build-up, in getting players into the box and attacking, but you know, if you have the right kind of profile of the player, they can also be really effective pressers too. You know, they're in a perfect position to disrupt build up, and against a team like Hull that try and do so, I think it is a good match for us. You know, it's something that I'm sure they're used to having deployed in them consistently throughout the season. You know, teams know how Hull plays, so it's going to be a weakness there. They kind of just gambled on trying to play through it. But I think the physicality and the intelligence of the timing on some of those presses from Kayembe especially, but also Kone, you know, made it incredibly difficult for them to really kind of consistently build up and play through the thirds. Having said that, one last thing. When they did beat the press, though, I thought Scott Twine and Liam Delap were quite effective carrying the ball. And there were a few occasions where, you know, they were pretty unfortunate not to have punished us a little bit more. Those just picking up the ball and driving forwards was really useful against us. And definitely something to kind of keep an eye on in terms of our style of play, especially I think that's one area where Livermore looked a little bit stranded at times. But, you know, again, that you kind of got to pick your battles a bit too.
Agree totally, wholeheartedly with Jordan there on the kind of guys carrying the ball, Liam Delap and Scott Twine up front. Obviously, that's how the goal came about, but they looked most dangerous, I thought, Hull, for all their possession. I think they had just over 60% to our 30%. For all their possession, they looked most dangerous when they kind of broke on us. You know, when we were committing players high up the field, they ran at us, and that, you know, and Philogene obviously was particularly dangerous. He had a ridiculous game in terms of statistical output. 9 shots, 23 attempted and 17 completed dribbles and 12 progressive runs, all of which were more than anyone else on the field, which, you know, pretty high as well, volume in those respects, in those metrics. But yeah, that was when they looked most dangerous. But I thought the thing that kind of impressed me most, having sat through other games recently, was, yeah, the intensity with which we pass the ball. You know, we talked about that kind of dreaded U shape against Huddersfield, the passing between the centre backs and the full backs, and occasionally mixing it up by inviting Jake Livermore to the party as well. But, you know, there was none of that. They, as I say, Lewis particularly, and to a lesser extent, Andrews underlapped. Lewis overlapped successfully, or quite dangerously at times as well. Those dual eights, as Jordan framed it, were really good, and we just had so much more intent and purpose about everything that we did. And then when we lost the ball, you know, in those transitions, that it was exactly the same. And Rajovic, you know, performed quite an important role, I think, in that respect as well, which we haven't really seen from him up to this stage. I lost count of the amount of times he got you know, all up in the face of Ryan Allsopp when he was trying to clear the ball, and you okay, nothing came of it, but he certainly ensured that he didn't have a comfortable afternoon with the ball at his feet. And
yeah, he was more involved in the game, wasn't he, Rajovic? He wasn't sort of just, he was getting back and sort of doing more of that target man sort of role, wasn't he?
He really was. I tallied four occasions, may have missed some. This is not Opta-Tom. This is not statistically definitely correct, but...
Opta-Tom, I like that.
On four occasions I counted, he received the ball, controlled it and laid it off to someone else, which is probably more than he's done it in the whole of the rest of the season. Funnily enough, aside from that, everything else suffered. Not a performance for the stat sheet, didn't have a shot, two touches in the box, only received four passes, only completed one of eight attacking duels, but nine of 13 passes completed and a key pass as well, i.e. a pass leading to a shot. And I think, you know, you see the contrast there, right, between Rajovic, the pure instinctive scorer, and then this kind of different role that he performed where he was bringing other people into play. And we looked, I think we looked better for it. But there's a decision to be made there, probably on a game-by-game basis, about how you utilise him, because I still don't think you're going to see both sides of him in one game, or certainly not at the same time.
I'd like him to protect the ball a little bit more as well. There are a few occasions where he had it and just couldn't quite retain it. I think he turned it over seven times. And, you know, he did look better in some ways, though. You know, he was able to get involved a little bit more, and he was dropping a little bit deeper defensively too. I think he had a little bit more defensive output in this one. But as you say, yeah, there wasn't really too much threat in the box, was there?
No.
Again, we weren't creating a ton of those sort of opportunities, but you know, it was a good performance. I think in some ways, all things considered, you know, opponent and the fact that it was away, where we are in the season, kind of the issues we've had and so on, we kind of found a nice blend. I think we could definitely make an argument for it being one of the most, you know, well-rounded performances altogether. But there were a few that they did struggle to get fully involved. I think, you know, you could say Rajovic is one. Also, I think Asprilla was a little bit quiet from that right-hand side as well.
Yeah, he was.
Was that fair? Was he a little bit underwhelming in this one?
Yeah, I thought so.
Not a game where he was particularly impactful, you're right, yeah.
Just struggle to really kind of, you know, often you want to see him drifting in from that right, you know, playing the ball through, getting shots away. You know, he didn't really get the ball too much, only 34 touches. You know, and 26 passes all game, 65% accuracy there, no key passes, you know, just not really fully involved. Lost the ball 13 times, obviously because he's been a little bit risky with some of it. Just not massively impactful from Yasser. And I think it's a weird one, because you kind of find himself in that position where he comes off the bench, does well, you put him in to start and he gets a little bit quiet from the beginning, doesn't he? So you kind of just get this perpetual cycle of him having his best performances coming off the bench in later parts of the game. I know we've discussed before other elements, fat or parts of his game that suit that later kind of introduction. But, you know, in terms of, you compare the impact he had against Norwich to Hull away, and it's vastly different. But he is a young player and you're going to have ups and downs. But yeah, I wish we could get just a little bit more out of him and maybe try and find some of that balance and efficiency we've discovered on the left with that kind of grouping of Hoot, Lewis, Kone and Semmer, and see if we can get something similar going on the right-hand side. That'd be ideal.
Ince came on for a spear on 65.
I think for a number of reasons. That right-hand side we talked about last week, you know, Martins is still, he's still favoured on that left, driving in on his right foot. I think that's going to be hit the preference still. And, you know, I think one thing I would like to give Tom Ince credit for as well is I think his game management when he came on was really good. He slowed things down nicely. He played the ball well. He cleared the ball down the line when he needed to. He played off whole defenders to win, throw in, slow things down. I think that's exactly what you want Tom Ince for in those situations. He's a good pro and he handled it very coolly. And I think, you know, at times we can be a little bit shaky. We made subs quite early in terms of bringing on Sirialta and Pollock. So we kind of made that decision with about 15 minutes, including stoppage time, to go. So you really had to be, you know, focused and aware if you're going to start to go into that more defensive style, and it's having someone that can come on and just be calm and collective in those situations and, you know what to do, I think really did help. And I was quite impressed with his performance, but not for the kind of normal kind of offensive threat you look for from Tom Ince.
And that change of Pollock on for Andrews meant that we saw Porteous on the right side for a little bit there.
Yeah, it was a weird shape, wasn't it, Tom?
I think... we might see a little bit more of this going forward. That's two games in a row now, isn't it, where he's brought both the spare centre halves on to just try and block it up and make it a bit more solid. It puts me in mind of Martin Allen at Barnet when I was working there and covering them. And he used to, whenever they were winning, he would put on, and trying to protect a lead, he would put on another centre half. And I think there's probably something to, although it bring, you know, inevitably kind of brings pressure onto you, doesn't it? Because the limits of your ambition become very apparent. I think there's something to be said for it when we've been a little bit fragile at times and had a bit of a propensity to shoot ourselves in the foot. I don't think Andrews had his best game, did he? And I suspect that was probably why Porteous ended up out there, got booked for a silly challenge. Don't think he was the threat he would normally have been going forward. It certainly felt like everything positive kind of emanated from the left-hand side. So I think actually it was a decent decision, but as you say, quite early substitutions for Ismail, certainly.
And then Mr. Kone also was substituted right at the end for Delibashu, who's been getting a few more minutes towards the end of the game. Hopefully he can be more involved. I think it's probably a case of giving him a bit of fitness. Is that right, with Tom Delibashu?
Yeah, a little bit at the end, wasn't it? We've got that kind of weird squad where you have players that get kind of in and out of the team, and they kind of almost forget they're involved, and they come, you know, drifting on the last 10 minutes of the game. And yeah, good to see him back in there, because, you know, early on, first few games, you thought Tom Delibashu was just kind of a nailed on kind of player in that number eight position. But yeah, no, good to see him back and able to be involved somewhat, even if it was, what is it, the 90th minute he came on.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, so a few 5 minutes.
Unsurprising, though, because Kone was run ragged by the end. He needed to get off a bit earlier because he was very, very tired, I imagine. He was running all over the shop. Tom Valerian Ismail called it his best performance. What did you make of that?
Yeah, he, a bit like Kembe, feels like someone's just had a bit of a new lease of life recently, doesn't he? He's been really, really, really kind of coming into his own, growing week by week. I think you can see the kind of improvement. Confidence is flowing. And again, a bit like Kembe, I kind of think a performance where he was impressive in and out of possession. No one had more touches in the opponent's box than him, but on the same by the same token or opposing kind of perspective, he won the ball back in the opponent's half more times than anyone else, won more loose ball duels than anyone else, was up there for interceptions as well. You know, I think he is very quickly becoming someone that is indispensable for us. So, yeah, it's a kind of culmination of a few really good weeks for him.
Yeah. And not just Kone's best performance. According to one particular person on this podcast, Jordan, you tweeted, "All things considered, that's our best performance of the season. Changed my mind." Care to elaborate on that one?
Yeah, I think I touched on it earlier, but just all things considered, I think opponent, the fact we're playing away from home, kind of what some of the struggles we've had on the pitch over the last few weeks or months as well. We kind of looked like we were drifting away from being quite an expansive risk-taking team to one that was, close to getting stuck in a kind of rut of pragmatism and kind of losing our way a little bit. And we really harped on at the beginning of the season how we looked like we found an identity and that was like some sort of ID to cling on to. And as the season went on, they started to lose that a little bit. And that game there was the first time that it kind of gave me a little bit of hope that we're starting to see somewhat of a blending. We talked about, are we laying a foundation? You can start to include some of those elements. And, often those sort of conversations get started, but oftentimes it doesn't come to fruition. But this one, we did see some positives. We started to show a little bit of control at times. It was a game we didn't have the majority of possession. We didn't have the majority of the chances. We were the more defensive team, but we were effectively counter-attacking. We were still playing the ball when we had it with much more intent. It looked much less improvised. And there was much more structure offensively, defensively, as you guys mentioned earlier on too. The pressing was good. It was a very well-rounded performance. In terms of what we've seen, we know we've got some quality in certain positions. We've got a bit of a mismatched squad, some areas more than others. Some were a little bit under average at times, but that can lead to those sort of chaotic results and performances. But I think the one against Hull there was really close to being kind of as perfect as we can get in some ways for what the circumstance required. So I was really high on that performance, and I still feel so.
Tom, do you agree?
Yes and no. I agree with a lot of what Jordan said. I was just going to say, and this isn't necessarily to run contrary to what Jordan's just said, I think the thing that was kind of most pleasing for me was that we found the way to win. And, that's, I think, speaks to character and sticking to the plan and the kind of positive aspects of what Jordan just outlined. Because I think on another day, I would sound the note of caution that could have gone the other way entirely, in that penalty goes in, heads go down, and we don't get the winner. Their XG, albeit boosted by a penalty, which is about 0.75 normally, most models, was 2 and a bit. Ours was less than 0.5. They had 60% of the ball and 23 shots. We had 30% of the ball and 10. That's a game that in another moment in this season, and last season certainly, I'm confident we would have lost. So I think it's a good thing that we won it. But I also think at the moment, you can almost, and certainly when you follow on Twitter, you can see almost goal by goal going in for against Watford, the mood changes and the narrative changes. And it's all, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again, I think it's still all quite fragile, even though it is only one defeat in 9. I saw people saying at 2-0 down against Norwich, Val out. And now I'm seeing people saying after back-to-back wins and hearing people on Do Not Scratch Your Eyes saying, oh, he's such a good manager, this is all down to him, he's brilliant, blah, blah, blah. So I think that, the truth, or as always with these things in sport, in football, in life, probably lies somewhere in the middle. But I would just kind of sound that note of caution that I think it could easily have gone another way and another day, but we got the win, and you can only kind of credit them for doing what was necessary to get those 3 points and find a way. And given this run of fixtures that we were so not looking forward to, I think with 6 points from the first 9 available, we're already tracking ahead of where we'd expect to be.
I think we're fourth in the form table, aren't we?
Oh, is that something what it around, is? I didn't know that. That is quite, that's quite yeah, something
from
impressive.
From the
then,
last, what, 5-6 games, we've had 3 wins, 2 draws and a loss, which isn't bad from the last 6 games. Only West Brom, Southampton, Leeds ahead of us. One of those, unfortunately, our next opposition. But we'll save that for a moment, because we haven't talked about the best part, probably, in some people's opinions, of the game against Hull, and that was the phenomenal shot from one central defender who goes by the name of Hoot. Tom, what did you make of the goal?
Yes, stunning goal. I think it was interesting to hear afterwards that they kind of worked on it and or you know at least identified it as a route to go down. I looked at Ryan Alsop's touch map earlier today, and I put it in the show notes. And there's a hell of a lot of touches outside the penalty area compared to your average goalkeeper. I think that was evident even before the goal. I jotted down a couple of instances. I think fairly soon after kickoff, after we'd opened scoring, he was picking the ball up well outside of his penalty area. Start of the second half, he was in the centre circle. You know, it was kind of fairly evident throughout that that's how he likes to play. So fair play for doing, you know, whoever picked up on that and encouraged him to do it. My only concern now, and I say this half tongue in cheek, but half seriously as well, is how many times between now and the end of the season are we going to see Wesley Hoot deciding because he's done it once, he's going to try his luck from 40 plus yards again. Yeah. I suspect it won't be in isolation, put it that way.
Well, in fairness, he was told to do that, wasn't he, Jordan?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is the keeper's going to play that game, then you have to at least be aware of it and consider the opportunity should it arise. And if there's any player on the pitch that's capable of doing that in a position where the keeper's going to be comfortable enough to be that advanced, it's going to be if the ball falls to Hoot. And, you know, the fact that he dispossessed, was it Delap he dispossessed towards the halfway line there?
And then,
and then he kind of gave an extra second where you kind of needed a quick turnover like that, really, didn't you? Just to have that extra little few seconds, extra few yards. And yeah, he really did well. And I mean, also credit to him for the rest of his performance outside of the goal as well. You know, he was reading the game really well. He kind of stepped in front a few times. He cut balls out that were driven into the box. I'd say arguably overall that was kind of one of his best, or if not his best game for us, let alone the match winning goal.
Yeah, there is a worry that people might get a bit carried away with that performance though, and start suggesting that he's the best, I don't know, Podso defender of all time, Tom. I think we should probably quell our expectations there.
Yeah, I think this is a kind of bit of a product of social media and the need to always come out with a strong view and always have an opinion on kind of every aspect of things. It wasn't that many weeks ago that we were kind of concerned about how rash he could be and whatnot, and he goes flying into a couple of challenges in that game. He catch in the penalty area, he catches a Hull player and gets sent off. He's not on the field to score that goal, you know. So I think he's been very good, and I think probably actually last two or three weeks he's really stepped it up again. But you know, there were times last season and there were times at the start of this season where he looked like a bit of a weak link as well. So he wouldn't be in my kind of probably top five at this point, which is not to say that he can't be further down the line.
He's not consistent, is he, Jordan? That's probably something that's plagued him throughout his career, because he has been playing at some really top clubs during his career. And it's obviously due to decent performances that he's put in, but he can't seem to sustain that over a long period. He does have drops, and it's noticeable when he has them.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those guys, isn't he? High ceiling, low floor sort of situation where, you know, he might have a 9 out of 10 game for 85 minutes, and then just has, you know, one mistake or one real costly error which can hurt you. Or he could be dominant in possession and, you know, change the way you look offensively as well as defensively. Or he can be on the other end and, you know, kind of diving into tackles or kind of misreading things in the box and causing errors and issues. So it's, yeah, he's a mixed bag, but I think you can facilitate him in ways which definitely allow him to kind of lean towards the more positive aspects of his game. You know, the use of the ball and so on is obviously a real asset that not many centre-backs have at their disposal, especially at this level. you know, obviously it resulted in a goal this time, but we've seen quite a few occasions as well, the fact they can really help us in the build-up and allow us to kind of spring attacks and get forward, especially if you start to see games that are becoming a little bit more counter-attacking like this one as well. You know, it's even more useful. So, yeah, he's a mixed one, but I think we've got short memories as Watford fans, and oftentimes we can over-hype and kind of undersell some players, but I think we'll all accept that this was a really good performance from Wes Hoot all round.
A good performance indeed. Right, let's get down to the important question then, Tom. Let's settle this debate. There's been a bit on Twitter. Whose was the best goal? Was it Hoot's or was it Ismaïla Sarr's? Or might I even enter a couple of alternatives in Chris Eagles and Ian Bolton?
I would still have to go with Ismaïla Sarr, and it's purely and simply for one reason, one aspect of the goal, which is that he does it on the turn. So he's already looked up, evidently, or aware of the situation, and sort of in one fairly fluid movement, spins, shoots, scores. Whereas Hoot, I think, it just felt a little bit less off the cuff, if that makes sense. It's a coin toss. They're both outstanding goals.
I think I agree, actually. Yeah, I think I'm on board with. Yeah, I think so. I'm a big fan of Chris Eagle's goal
Wasn't nearly as far out, though.
Yeah.
And no, the keeper was kind of pretty far out. I think he headed the ball out and it got all in the wrong place, didn't he?
Yeah, so. No, I think I'll go with Sarr's out of the bunch there. And Sarr's? Yourself?
Okay. Well, in that case, I will go. Well, you know what? I will ear on the side of Hoot only because he's not expected to get that on target because of his position. And he was carrying out an instruction. So in that sense, perhaps it didn't seem as off the cuff. And sometimes, as you know, it's easier to do something when you're not thinking about it. And because he had been instructed to look for this opportunity, I felt like he'd probably thought, oh, this is a good opportunity to take advantage of. And he actually managed to get it. I mean, how many times when we try and do something do we actually manage to succeed first time compared to when we just do something and we're like, oh, I did it.
No, it's true. There's definitely an element of that. They were both outstanding goals. The fact that we scored kind of halfway line goals in back-to-back seasons is remarkable.
Good point, actually. Yeah, it doesn't happen that often, does it really? I wonder what next year's are going to be. And who is it going to be as well?
Ben Hamer.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, maybe. Not too many goalkeeper goals.
Where was Ben Foster's goal? Well, the one that Ben Foster conceded. I was trying to think about that one. That was against Robinson, wasn't it?
Spurs away. Paul Robinson. I was in the Spurs end.
Was it?
For that. So it's quite annoying. I know. Had to clap Ben Foster getting lobbed by another goalkeeper.
Can you recall when Watford last scored a goalkeeper goal?
You say it like it happens sort of infrequently enough to be mentioned. I can't remember us ever scoring one.
No, I can't recall ever, no. But it must have happened at some point, right? Surely some Watford goalkeeper scored at some point.
I'll tell you what.
Not in our lifetime, perhaps.
Someone will know. I'll throw it out on our Twitter now. Someone will know.
I wonder if Tony Coton got one. You know what?
In our history, I can't think of too many occasions where we've ever had a keeper kind of even go up for a corner and even come close to getting a touch on it, to most of you.
Scott Loach, maybe. Didn't score, but yeah. I think, did he come close?
I don't remember.
I don't know.
I've blanked out.
Somebody out there will be helping us out. They'll be researching and they'll come up with something.
I can't think of a goal, but for some reason, when I'm trying to think of a keeper scoring, I just had a flash of that horrible save that Panteleimon tried to make in the FA Cup against Palace, where he kind of kicked into the top corner of his own net.
What was that? He was a bad, bad goalkeeper. And should be remembered in the debate about Batman being the worst Watford goalkeeper ever, which certain people are having.
Oh, absolutely. I'd also add Jack Bonham into that. Not that he really had much of a chance at Watford, but if we're just judging performances, then that was a bad performance. Sorry, Jack.
That's true.
So, I mean, harsh for a youngster like that coming in.
If you're listening, if you're
he
listening,
has since gone on to be a decent League One level goalkeeper. Or is that where he is currently?
I think he's at Stoke.
Is he
now,
at Stoke?
Isn't
it? It? Gosh, that's how.
Yeah, someone has virtually immediately replied to say that Steve Sherwood scored against Coventry.
Steve Sherwood? Oh, okay,
so
fair
what
enough.
Was that, 80s?
Nice one.
70s, 80s?
Yeah.
So there
yeah.
you
Who gave us that? You need to shout them out.
Yeah, should really do, shouldn't we? Darren Sear, at Darren Sear. Go and give him a follow. He's evidently a much more learned Watford fan
nice
than
one.
We are. And
nice
in fact,
one,
I'll follow him for us.
And a little bit of Costel Pantelimon trivia, seeing as we're here.
Yeah,
he's a hearing child of two deaf parents. Interesting.
Oh wow!
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice.
So fluent in sign language, one can assume. I'd say that knocks him a rank up in the goalkeeper listing.
I was at St Albans Western Super Mare recently, and there were a load of children from a nearby school that is either for or caters for those with that are hard of hearing or have hearing issues or what have you. And I was so captivated by watching them, like the speed that they could sign at, thinking like bloody hell, it's so impressive. It was more entertaining. It was more impressive and enjoyable in a weird way than the game.
I wonder if the speed of hand movement leads into the goalkeeper thing, maybe.
There you go.
I played football with a guy for a year. I didn't know he was deaf the entire time. He was so good at
living.
No
way.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's very impressive.
That's remarkable.
Wow.
That's remarkable.
Not great man on
impressive.
There.
Yeah, cool. Really interesting. All right, then up next, Southampton and then Ipswich as well. Another back-to-back game, both at home and both difficult opposition. But given that we're going into this off the back of a very decent performance, it's probably not a bad way to enter this one, right?
Yeah, I feel like if you're going to go into a game against Southampton, given the form that they're in, you want to do it with confidence, and we will have built that up. They're unbeaten. They haven't lost since they went on a bit of a nightmare run early on in the season where they lost four in a row. So they're racking up the wins at the moment. Don't score a huge amount of goals. Don't score a crazy amount of goals, kind of one and twos, but they're looking good. You know what you're going to get from them in terms of being a Russell Martin side, lead the division for passes, final third passes. Up there for forward passes, don't go long, put a lot of crosses in. So, you know, they're a decent team, one of the kind of team in the playoff places as far as expected goals are concerned. So they're going to be a tough test. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of surprised. I thought they might be, especially early on, you kind of lost so many players. Russell Martin came in so late, and they've got really, to my mind at least, really weird kind of hodgepodge of a squad now from kind of having two or three managers last season, signing a load of young players, signed a few more experienced players now. You know, it doesn't feel like anyone's been able to stamp their authority on it. So I think, got to say, I've been really impressed with the kind of job that Russell Martin has done in getting them where they are and getting them going. It's definitely going to be a step up from Hull, who obviously have playoff aspirations of their own. So yeah, really, really tough one. But you know, they should be going into it with a decent bit of confidence off the back of the last two results.
Yeah. They haven't lost many games this season. And they had a little blip, but then they got firmly back onto it, didn't they? Tough opposition, Jordan.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how we go into this one. You know, I think we probably expect them to come to Vicarage Road and try and dominate the ball again. Look to control things there and maybe give us a chance to explore this kind of counter-attacking side or style that we kind of did so well at Hull there, and maybe try and replicate our performance a little bit. That's what I'd like to see from this one.
Another unchanged 11, do you think, Tom?
I see no reason to change it. Certainly not. No, yeah, you've got to stick with the hot hand, so to speak, or the hot hands. So, yeah, keep with it.
Only question I'd say, maybe Espirito out. Not that I would be opposed to keeping him in, but I think if anyone's going to get changed, it might be him. You could also maybe look at Siriata coming back in potentially as well.
Yeah, okay. That's a good point, actually. Siriata has sort of regained fitness and now looking like likely to be, what, in for Porteous, do you think?
If he's to come in, then you'd expect, yeah, for Ryan Porteous.
Well, thanks a lot, guys, for joining me this evening and chatting through that one. One of the nicer ones to talk through in recent memory. So, yeah, enjoyed that. Hopefully the Southampton and Ipswich games are just as nice to talk through. Yeah, if we can't get one out this weekend, then we will combine them both into one. Hope we're talking about two victories in one, although that might be slightly optimistic. But who knows? Who knows? We're in a good moment, as Javi Gracia used to say. All right, then. That's us for this one. We'll see you in the next ones. We've been the What for Buzz podcast, and have a nice evening. Bye-bye.
Ta-ra.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.